This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Yo, what's shaking, everybody? It is Jeff Ketchum. I'm back with another edition of the Red Bastard Podcast. Glad to have you. We're a couple of days away, like 48 hours away from the Community Shield, which is interesting because a year ago, I had the hardest time remembering the Community Shield's name. it was one of those things that after it occurred, I forgot about it, but it's back. And if we beat Arsenal on Saturday, I promise I will remember that we played for the Community Shield, like in November or December. But look, man, it is good to be back. It's been a few weeks since I've done a podcast. Liverpool have played in a couple of friendlies. A little bit of business got done with the addition of Kostas Tsimikas, which we'll get into him in a little bit. And if you'll notice, I pronounced his name slightly different than everybody else has. It's just one of those things. I'll get to Mr. Tsimikas a little bit later on in the podcast. Took a couple of weeks off working on life and other things going on in the world. Good to be back doing a podcast and lots of stuff to talk about. It's funny what happens when you don't do a podcast in a couple of weeks. You come back and there's just all kinds of shit you want to say. The first thing I want to lead off with today in today's edition of the Red Bastard, which is like a preamble for Saturday's friendly, championship belt match against Arsenal. We'll start with Genie and Thiago. And it was a topic in my last podcast. That was a couple of weeks ago. Thiago has not yet joined Liverpool. Genie has not yet left Liverpool. Those two things don't automatically have to be connected. Let's start with the Genie thing. I personally believe that Genie Wijnaldum is going to play out this season for Liverpool. And then I think he's going to leave on a free. And then I think he's going to break the bank and sign somewhere on a 4-year deal and get paid. And I think sometimes this happens. And I totally get it from both sides. Look, if you're in Liverpool, you've had Genie for like half a decade on a sweetheart deal. You're in the last year of that deal. It's still such a sweetheart deal that to extend him or give him a raise like defeats the purpose of you ever been to a casino and won big? I've done this. Gone to the craps table, get a little hot, you get up a couple of $1,000s, and at that point, what do? Do you cash out the moment that you go up big? Do you cash out or do you want to win more? Do you take that $2,000 that you've won at the craps table and say, I'm done, no more fun, no more playing, let's just go spend this cash? Or do you let it ride? Do you let it play? Do you try to build on two? I have done that before. At no point have I ever reached a high point in playing cards. Cards is different. Certainly, though, in the craps table or blackjack, is definitely the games where when I hit my apex, I never know when to get out. Craps, every time I go to Vegas and play craps, I go up and then I lose it all. Slowly. A little bit different than blackjack, which I can blow it really quickly. Craps is a game where I almost always get up big. And then I slowly bleed it away like over 2 hours. And then you get to a point where you're up a couple of grand and then there's like a safe point. A lot of times for me, that's like $500, $800. I don't know. It kind of depends on the night, what's going on. But you hit that low mark where you're like, okay, I'm out. I told myself when I hit 2000 that if I got below 500, I was going to get out with something, right? I think this is Liverpool looking at the Genie deal and saying, we've had 5 years of a really good deal, and we're going to cash out high. We're going to take this last season. We've got him on a team-friendly deal. I think I was listening to the Anfield Rap guys earlier today, and they mentioned that I think it might have been Neil Atkinson mentioned that he was like on £4 million a year, which for a world-class midfielder is an absolute steal. Absolute steal. Gini Wijnaldum is one of the least paid guys, certainly among, you know, active first team players. And it's kind of odd to me that Gini has never made a stink about it, because I would. Everybody else has gotten raises. Gini never got his. He is always on the field. He is always in the lineup, always in the big matches. I mean, his place in Liverpool history is set. And he's never complained, which I hope when this thing's all said and done and it goes the way I think it's going to go, that Liverpool fans always remember Gini Wijnaldum as the guy that could have bitched and didn't and put in world-class performances and then left potentially, God, and I'm knocking on wood right now because there's still like a season where, in theory, this could all change. But Gini's never grumbled. He's never grumbled. And I think Liverpool has said, look, man, if we give Gini big money now, we're going to overpay against the deal where we've been underpaying. And what's the point of having a good deal if when the good deal is over, you overpay in the next deal to overcompensate for the underpaying that occurred? And look, Liverpool at this point, it's as plain as day at this point, is saying we're not gonna be the ones that paid Gini Wijnaldum for us having a good deal the last 4 or 5 seasons. And if you're Gini, I get it. Because Gini leaving on a free, not only do you think about his annual contract, and you know, maybe he goes from like 60, 70,000 a week to 150, 180, something like that, depending on where he goes. You know, there's a matter of a signing bonus. You know, teams overpay for players all the time when they don't have to put in a transfer fee. Christian Eriksen's a good example. His, you know, the deal he was able to carve out for himself worked out great for him financially. And that's what Gini Wijnaldum has in front of him. He'll be able to go get a really nice signing bonus in lieu of whatever team that wants to sign him didn't have to pay a transfer fee. So either he gets a bunch of money up front or they bet it into his, you know, yearly salary, which gets paid by week. And regardless, he's going to get paid. And I think Liverpool have looked at this and said, we don't want to trample over the investment that we've made and the win that we currently have in this deal. And I think they also know that in making that investment and giving up the leverage that they have or have had over the course of the last 5 years, that they'd be doing so on years where there's no guarantee, right? Like all of our players are mostly in their late 20s. All of them are key. So many of our key players are in that sweet spot of like 28, 29 years old. They're all creeping up to 30. We know there's a bit of an expiration date looming on some of our players. I think that if you're Liverpool, and you've looked at Gini Wijnaldum as one of the real good pieces of business that you've done, and you will point to it as an inspiration for further deals that you want to do, you don't take 2 steps forward and 3 steps back. And I think that's where we are with the Gini Wijnaldum deal. And I think that you can't get enough money right now for Gini Wijnaldum with the amount of time he has left on his deal. I think 1 year of Gini Wijnaldum is probably worth 15, 20 million. And, you know, because A, he's needed, and B, you start getting into these really fine margins where, look, if I told you right now, pick Kevin De Bruyne for a second, just for the sake of me making a point. If I told you right now that you could have Kevin De Bruyne for 15 million for 1 year. I mean, you do it in a heartbeat, right? I mean, he's making that much money annually anyway. And you're already paying guys 15 million a year. Would you just pay 15 million to have Kevin De Bruyne on your team? Yes, you would. For 1 year? Absolutely. Well, Gini Wijnaldum isn't, Gini's not KDB, but Gini's world class. Gini is, if he's not world class, he's borderline. And when I say he's world class, I mean he starts for PSG this past weekend. He starts for Barcelona. He starts for Real Madrid. Would he have gotten into Bayern this weekend? I don't know if he starts, in part because they really only play two midfielders. I mean, they're pretty heavy in attack. And we'll get to Thiago in just a moment, who did finish out the campaign as a starter on the current European champions in both their semifinal and final games. I mean, you know, but when it comes to Gini, he can walk into virtually 99% of the teams in the world, and he's an instant starter. He walks into Man City, he's a starter. He walks into Manchester United, he's a starter. Chelsea, starter. Tottenham, definite starter. Arsenal, definite starter. Starts for everybody in the Premier League. Starts for everybody in Spain. Although, maybe getting into that Atletico Madrid midfield because of the existence of the Thomas Partey and the guys that they have, maybe at least then he's on a rotation, which is kind of what he has at Liverpool to a certain degree. And if he were on a team like Bayern Munich, you know, he's probably playing constantly in a rotation with a few of their guys. I love Gini, but I get it from both sides. And I'm completely cool if he plays out this season, leaves, and goes and gets paid. At that point, I'll say good for Gini Wijnaldum, man. Sometimes guys aren't meant to play their entire careers at one place. And in order for him to stay at Liverpool long-term, he has to give up too much money. And I want Gini Wijnaldum to get paid. I'm a bastard, but I don't want to be a bastard towards Gini Wijnaldum. I want Gini to get his money. And if it can't be from Liverpool, I still want him to get his money. Especially knowing that, like, he hasn't been getting his money. I mean, he's got money compared to almost everybody else on the face of the earth, but in terms of his value, he hasn't. So go get paid, Gini. I do not want Gini Wijnaldum sold for pennies on the dollar. We've got to figure out a way this season to have Gini and Thiago Alcantara on the team together. And I think if anything, I think the Messi stuff potentially adds a sense of urgency around Liverpool in terms of what it might take to beat Man City this season, that maybe you add Thiago and you don't need to move anybody out necessarily for the sake of balancing the books. Now, as it relates to Thiago, nothing has changed for me. He's absolute class. He absolutely adds something to this team. If you bring him in and you keep Gini, then your depth in midfield is such. You know, there's so much conversation about who the starting three would be. Oh, like, does Jordan – what happens with Jordan Henderson, player of the year in the Champions League, and then he can't – Thiago shows up and he's going to lose his job. I think everybody's looking at this from the wrong way. With as many games as Liverpool is going to play this season, you've got to think of Fabinho, Gini, Jordan, Keita, and Milner, and I think the presence of Thiago. That's six guys. That's six guys that you can almost play in any order. You can play almost any of those guys other than Fabinho in the eight. You can play Gini there. You can play Jordan there. You probably wouldn't want to play Milner there, but he could in a pinch. Obviously, you could play Keita in an eight. So, you know, all those guys can play the eight. All those guys can play as holding midfielders. Gini can do Fabinho's job. Jordan can do Fabinho's job. They can all play kind of all of the different positions. Keita, long-term, probably, you know, I like personally the idea of Keita and Thiago on the field together. Put them on the pitch together. Let's get another, let's not take someone off to get someone on who brings some of the same skill sets. Let's, you know, this is part of me is wondering, is Jurgen Klopp looking at this team and thinking to himself, what would Pep do? Pep would get another guy that gives you defense but adds to your offense, and I think that's what Thiago Alcantara does. I think the deal gets done. I think, look, here's the reality. Thiago literally finished his season 5 days ago, 4 days ago, 4 days ago. So if it was announced the day after the final, man, he can come in and do the press shoot, but he needs 2-3 weeks off. So I think there's a buffer period. And I think Liverpool and Bayern Munich played this right the entire way. Liverpool allowed Thiago to finish it. They showed Bayern Munich the same level of respect that they would want on the other side. They refused to engage in a way that would be a distraction for Bayern as they went for the Champions League. And it's not what Real would do. It's not what Barcelona would do. They would piss all in anybody's Cheerios just to do what they want to do. But I think Liverpool and Bayern Munich have mutual respect for each other. I think Klopp and that entire crew look at Bayern Munich and they say that organization is one of our peers. And next year we may be in the Champions League final. And you know what? We wouldn't want the same thing happening to us. Finish the season. Finish the season, because even if we announce the deal the day after the season, even if we've done a bunch of tampering and we've tapped him up and he signs the next day, he still can't be in camp because he needs a couple of weeks off. So even if they announced him tomorrow, he would still have another week or two off. Like, I don't know how much time Thiago gets on vacation, but he's going to get at least a couple of weeks off. He literally just stopped playing 4 days ago. So you've got Liverpool and Bayern Munich have time. The only urgency of like, get this thing done, is because we've been talking about it for so long. But the proper time frame is this window that exists. And I saw a report earlier today that said they expected the deal to get done in the next 10 days or so. Yeah, guess when that coincides? You know, like right about the time that Bayern Munich would be coming back to camp to get ready for its season. And right about the time that Thiago Alcantara finishes his vacation and will start getting ready for the next season. It's that simple. So everybody chill out. Liverpool, they're going to get Thiago done. And I think part of that is simply, I think there's now pressure to get it done. You can't have Man City about to do what they might be about to do and then be quibbling over 20 million when you've got a chance to sign a world-class player. I don't want to hear it because like I said, Gini Wijnaldum is worth 15 million a year. I would make the case, this idea of, well, for 30 million, you could get Thiago. Thiago might not be worth 30 million in a year. He might not be. That might be too much. It would be too much for Gini. If someone offered Gini, someone offers 30 for Gini, I wouldn't want to do it. The money doesn't matter. Part of my brain would say, nah, we'll still pass. I'll keep Gini. But the brain, the responsible bookkeeping side of me would go, oh, 30? You're going to get 30. Okay. I think Thiago's kind of in that deal in the same. Like, I understand the hesitancy to look at this from the prism of paid 30-ish million and get Thiago a year when he could be free. But what we know about, here's what concerns me slightly about Liverpool and Thiago. We know that it takes a few months of betting in to kick in. So what you're paying for is not just Thiago this year. You're paying that fee to get Thiago full 100% on board going into next season when you don't have Gini Wijnaldum. What you don't want to be doing if you're Liverpool is signing a midfielder next year and giving him 3 weeks to learn how to replace Gini Wijnaldum. If you sign Thiago now, then even if it takes him 3 months to completely bed in and it's November before he kicks on a little bit like Fabinho did when he was in his infancy as a Liverpool player, you still have him ready to hit the ground running a year from now when you really need it. And they will. They will. They'll need 30-year-old Thiago Alcantara to be 100% Liverpool and add water instant player whenever Klopp fills out the lineup. That's why it has to get done now. Because a 30-year-old Thiago next year in year one at Liverpool trying to bed in the summer after the season ends. And, you know, it's taken Keita a couple of years to completely adjust. You can't just assume, even as great as Thiago is, that the first 6 months of his career at Liverpool would be completely smooth. Well, the bedding in process needs to be at a time when you can play him in midweek games, when the games are coming fast and furious, and you've got your A team and you've got your B team, and your B team is potentially, you know, some combination of Milner, Thiago, and maybe one of Genie and Hendo kind of rotating in and out. Maybe you put Keita in there with that group, or maybe that's where Curtis Jones gets his playing time. Like, that is where it's at. You have two midfields. They can be the best midfield in any game they play in any game this season. And Thiago gives you that versatility. It's low pressure. Whereas if he comes in next year and Genie is gone, there's an immense amount of pressure to be great right away. You buy him for $30 million this year. You let him slowly bed in. You already got your A-team midfield. Nobody would blink if in November, in a big game, Thiago's not named. But, well, we're deep in the midfield, and it happens. Same thing happens at Bayern Munich. Sometimes Thiago didn't start. Sometimes, you know, it would be Goretzka mixed in with, I'm blanking right now on what their mid, who Thiago was competing for that midfield playing time at the end. But you're talking about, you know, a situation that he's used to. I think it gets done. I think everybody needs to chill out. No worries. As it relates to the friendlies that have already been played, I don't really have any issues with them. I think we have looked – I mean, I don't think you could watch what happened a couple of days ago on Tuesday and say that that was our finest hour. But I think you can understand in the context of heavy legs, having just played a couple of days before, I mean, you could just see that – I don't know. We've got a clunker in us in every preseason, it seems like, under Klopp. There's always – there have been moments in every preseason where we have looked sublime. And then there have been some moments where it's been like, ugh. And a year ago, what was it, a year ago when they lost to when Napoli blew the doors off of us. I didn't panic then and go, oh, my God, look what – I just – you know, it's preseason, whatever. As an American – everything that happens in preseason professional sports in America is wasteful. In fact, it's so wasteful, it's viewed as a bit of a smoke and mirage game, if you will. Like, you'll see something in a preseason game, but because they're not really game planning, because it's so less stressful in a myriad of ways for everybody involved. It's just a little bit of fool's gold there. And so I've been watching this and looking at individuals, and I think that, you know, you look at a guy like Rianne Brewster and you go, yep, that's what he does. He scores goals. I don't think we get too high. I don't think we get too low. I don't know what the right move for Rianne Brewster is. I know. I want to keep him, but I understand if Jurgen Klopp or the Liverpool team in general look at him and say, we've got to get him more game time than he's going to get here. This is a guy that needs to get 30 starts and play 2,000 minutes this year, and it's not going to happen with us. But that might be something that we look from him in a year from now. But he can't – the first time he ever plays 2,000 minutes, they may be thinking, it can't be with us. And I get that. So let him go out potentially. I want to keep him. But if Sheffield United comes in and they're committed to playing him every week and Klopp feels like he can take them at his word, then let that kid go score 15 goals this year for Sheffield United. And he won't play against us, so it'll weaken them the two times that we play Sheffield United. Let him go score 15 goals against the rest of the Premier League. Let him get his sea legs. I'm okay with it. Won't be my favorite thing in the world, but I totally understand the idea of loaning him out this season. The Swansea loan was a good move for him. given where Liverpool is, I understand typically you would say, no, if you loan him out again, it's a bad sign. I think it's a little different when you're arguably the world's number one or number two team. Because at that point, the standard is so high that we have to put in a bit of a curve with which we use to grade players, simply because it's a pretty high bar at this point that Rianne Brewster is being held to. This is no normal bar. I mean, the last couple of years he'd be playing for Manchester United. You know, this is what it's like to play for Liverpool and Man City. It is hard to crack those lineups. And it will be hard to crack Manchester United moving forward. It's one of the weird things about the concept of, I mean, I guess if you're Manchester United, just add, you want to be Man City, oddly enough. And you want to be able to say you have world-class attacking players up and down your team. In your backup team, you have that kind of talent. They're so young and they've got such good players. It's weird. I don't completely know what happens. Would they bump Anthony Martial out if they added Jadon Sancho? Because Greenwood's got to stay, right? And we know that we know that Marcus Rashford's not going anywhere. So unless they completely – and they almost couldn't go to a 4-2-3-1 because Bruno Fernandes would have to play that number 10-ish role in that lineup. You wouldn't want him in the holding midfield. You wouldn't want Bruno Fernandes to be a defensive midfielder, right? So I don't know. In terms of how you make an optimal best 11, adding Sancho and taking one of those players off feels like a bit of marginal gains for me. You make one for sure, but I wonder what happens to the player that's the odd man out of that musical game of chairs, a game of musical chairs that Klopp has avoided. He's got three number one guys, no doubt about it. I'm convinced it's the reason why Liverpool doesn't have Timo Werner right now. I don't think Klopp wants – I think while he's got these dudes in their 20s, he does not want to have to deal with Timo Werner asking, when do I get my game, coach? Because if you're Jurgen Klopp, you got to tell Timo Werner, you see that dude over there? You see what number he's wearing? You see that number 10? Sadio Mane is better than you, and I can't take him off to get you on. You see that guy over there, wearing number 11? He's better than you. I can't take Mo Salah off the pitch to get you on it. And it's one of the, like I said, it's one of those things. At some point, if United close the Sancho deal and or, go back to those talks, I do wonder who the odd man out for Manchester United would be. Look, they'd have someone great coming off the bench if they can keep that dude happy. But I would have to believe any of those, if you're making Anthony Martial a guy coming off for the last 30 minutes of games, he wants out. Mason Greenwood, suddenly you have the same issue with him that you got with Rianne Brewster. You're not getting him enough game time. And is he happy getting 30 minutes every now and then? Like, it's a tricky problem. And it's why I understand loaning Rianne Brewster out, even if I want that. I want that talent at Liverpool in moments where Liverpool need a goal, and he would clearly be the best go-get-a-goal option on the team among the reserves, with all due respect to Divock Origi, who, if Liverpool could get some money for Divock Origi, I would totally be down. Sell Divock. I love Divock. I want him to go get paid too. I want him to be happy. I want him to be successful, but I don't want him coming in at the expense of Rianne Brewster. Just saying. A few other notes on the team as we kind of move things up. I'll wrap up the podcast here in a moment. I realize it's been a couple of weeks, so now I've just been letting it all out. I love this young kid, the 17-year-old center back, Comateo, the French kid. Like, that's a kid. I don't know how that kid showed up at 17 and kind of caught us all off guard, the Billy the Kid. But he has been a bit of a godsend for the last, I don't want to make too much out of it, because we are talking about a situation where he may not even be on the team this year. I don't even know completely what Liverpool does with Kumateo. Kumateo. It's a name I've got to work on. I will get it right. I need to go to the pronunciation guide. I don't want to be that, because we're going to get to the pronunciation thing here in a second. Kumateo, I think, is the way I've heard other people pronounce it. Can't say that I'm completely sure, but I want to see more of that kid. I'm actually okay, in theory, with that kid being the number four center back. And knowing that in an injury crisis, Fabinho is your number four. But in a non-injury crisis situation, I'm halfway tempted to let that kid develop on our time. He has come in against decent competition, has looked the furthest thing from out of place. That Klopp has been so hands-on with this kid, that he's been so involved in the last couple of weeks, giving him one-on-one sessions a couple of different times. I'm not saying it's going to happen. It's much more likely that he's playing in the under-23s or the under-21s or the under-19s. I mean, he's a young kid. He's a French under-19 international? And yet, there's a part of me that wants to see him growing, and that kid with that much ups. I mean, you can just see it, like, who the fuck is that kid? Where'd he come from? Why is he bigger than Virgil? It almost scares me that he's bigger than Virgil. It's like, is that kid going to grow up and be like a basketball player? Is he a power? Don't turn into a power forward. Slow down. You've grown enough. Stop. You just develop outward now and not upward. Because, you know, my goodness, he goes up any more upward and he'll be Peter Crouch. But I like that. Look, he's better than Seth Vandenberg right now. And they have to have been thinking, could we get by with Seth? Or, you know, can we get by with Phillips? And that might be another option. And maybe Nat Phillips ends up being the number four. And he feels very Clavon-like to me. He's okay. I feel like in a pinch, if you had to start him, you wouldn't freak out and say someone completely incompetent is back there. If he was Virgil, you're probably feeling pretty good. Like anybody back there with Virgil, you're feeling pretty good about that. But he doesn't have the upside of Kumateo. And there's a part of me in a very short amount of time that has said, I'm okay with that kid developing on our watch. And that he's 17, he's got a little bit of that Harvey Elliott thing, and that they don't have to send him out right away. There will come a time when Harvey Elliott needs to go out on loan, but it's not right now. And Kumateo is the same way. So he's a guy that I'd actually, like, I don't know, maybe you can't call him your number four, but maybe he's your number 4B. And in games against the Little Sisters of the Poor, I might give him a run out and let him grow up on our watch a little bit, because at worst, that dude might end up being a guy that Liverpool's able to sell in a few years from now for a lot of money. Although he seems to be the kind of guy that they're looking for all the time. And if he turns out to be a player, you've got a center back, he's worth his weight in gold. Real quick, Leo Messi. Wow. I need to hit refresh on Twitter and make sure that nothing's happened there. I don't know what to make of that. He's a great player. If he goes to Man City, he makes them better. Does he make them better? It's an interesting deal. I've had this conversation with a few people. There's a part of me. Look, if you add Lionel Messi to your team, you are adding offensively a phenomenal player. But you are getting someone who is going to walk and jog around the pitch. I mean, look, the dude, he might score 50 goals for you. So you can ignore that whole – and look, with Messi, you know, they chalk it off to, oh, he's probing the field. And it's probably true, but it sounds like the kind of excuse that you make for somebody when they're lazy and their work rate's not very good. Like, oh, well, no, he's not getting back and helping. But he's probing. And he is involved in so many goals that, you know, you absolutely, he doesn't do anything defensively, but he did, you know, chip in 50 goals and 20 assists. So, you know, there's that. The conversation I have is, would you rather play Man City with Messi where they don't press? Or would you rather play Man City with no Messi where they do press? The thing about Man City that scares you is they're pressing. It's the thing that makes Liverpool scary, right? It is converting defense to offense in the blink of an eye. And Liverpool and Man City don't have the luxury of being able to, you know, counterpunch people anymore. You know, they don't see other teams become aggressive on them and then find themselves in a position where they're countering teams very often. There's no, you know, it'd be nice if Liverpool could counterattack occasionally because they're so good at it, but they don't get to do it very often. Man City's the same way. They're scariest when they're pressing. They're scariest when they're playing you in your final third, and then they're creating defense and putting the ball in the back of the net in the span of a couple of seconds. If you put Messi on Man City, he's going to score a bunch of goals, and he's going to have a bunch of assists, and he's going to make them better. But defensively, they will be weaker. And if you look at what Man City, Man City's problems, they had multiple problems last year. But at times, they just gave up. They just weren't sound defensively enough last year against good teams especially. You know, you look at the way Chelsea was able to cut them open at the end of the year. You look at what Liverpool was able to do when they got them at Anfield earlier in the year. You look at what happened to them eventually in the Champions League. Their defense could get cut to pieces. Now, maybe they could go get Messi and still find a way to add Koulibaly, and doing that feels like the greatest fuck you to the history of, like, principals and bosses and supervisors. It's the most Al Davis thing I've ever heard of in my entire life. The idea that you would go from out of Europe for 2 years to having that overturned on what turned out to be kind of a technicality, and then you just go buy Leo Messi and Koulibaly in the same window. YOLO! Like, part of me can't help but to, like, nod my cap to the audacity of such a thing. Part of me wants to see this. Part of me thinks one of the things that would make Liverpool the best Liverpool it can be this season is to scare Liverpool. You know, when we in the last couple of years have been apprehensive and fearful of Man City and thought, man, any point that we drop could cost us dearly because we lost by a point a couple of years ago because we scored 98 and didn't get to the finish line. And that'll do a hell of a thing to your psyche. And not even Man City has that because they didn't score 90 this year, 90 plus, and lose. So Liverpool has lived in a world where they scored 90 plus and lost. Well, now they just went for 99 and blew the doors off of everybody. And the thing we're all wondering about is, what will Liverpool do as a front runner? What will Liverpool do when they're being the chase instead of the chaser? Well, you could make a case that if you add a Leo Messi to Man City, Liverpool players will suddenly feel like they're chasing Man City. Suddenly they can play the disrespect card. Suddenly they can play the nobody thinks we're going to win. Everybody thinks that Man City's going to win. And it does a little something to you mentally. It dials you a little bit more in. There's part of me as a fan of footy in general that wants to see what Leo Messi on Man City does. There's part of me that wants to see what Liverpool does against a Man City with Leo Messi, because if you win the league this year and Leo Messi is on that team, or if you win the Champions League this year and Leo Messi is playing for Man City, it gets to count as one of the greatest accomplishments in the history of the sport. I'm big on going for greatness. And oddly enough, Leo Messi joining Man City ups the stakes for Liverpool's ability to call themselves all-time great when this thing's all said and done, when it's all over with and history is written and 50 years have gone by and they're talking about this era of football. Leo Messi going to Man City has a chance to do as much for Liverpool as it has to do for Man City. And it would change Man City. And it would change that locker room. Suddenly that is Leo Messi's team. And suddenly the ball is running through Leo Messi instead of Kevin De Bruyne. Is that, talk about like investing in diminishing returns. There's nobody in the Premier League you want to have the ball more than Kevin De Bruyne. Now, if you add Leo Messi into the league, there's nobody that you want to have the ball more than Leo Messi, but suddenly you've marginalized Kevin De Bruyne. I mean, I guess at that point, you just tell KDB, don't really worry about like carrying the ball. You just go get in the box. And also, that whole cross thing, you're not really going to cross them into Messi. Yeah. So, and no more crosses from you. Not if you're aiming them for him. So, I don't know. It's a weird one. Like, there's a part of me that's scared shitless about Leo Messi at Man City. And there's just another part of me that goes, that's a little too many cooks in the kitchen. That's a little too many cooks in the kitchen. And you know what? If we're being completely honest, in a few years from now, nothing could blow Man City up more than the precedent of adding Leo Messi to its roster for the next 3 years. Because suddenly Kevin De Bruyne wants more money. Suddenly Raheem Sterling wants more money. Suddenly everybody's walking in and wanting more money. And now half your team is on $350,000 a week, all as they get older. And I know Man City's got more money than God. However, paying Leo Messi $100 million a year for the next 3 years? Till he's 36? Really? I mean, again, maybe this is the American sports fan in me coming out, but Liverpool doesn't want to be on the bad years of a Gini Wijnaldum contract that would pay him, you know, $150,000, $160,000, $170,000 a week. Leo Messi makes $1 million a week. You really want to be on the bad side of that deal? So, look, Man City wants to go for it and go for glory and financial fair play, whatever. They want to go for it. There's as much risk as there is reward, and the curiosity inside of me says, do it. I dare you. I dare you. Do it. Do it. Because I still like Liverpool's chances a lot. So, you know, if you tell me at any point next year that Liverpool is playing Man City and Man City isn't pressing, that Man City can't get after Liverpool, both with its midfield and pressing us in our third of the field? Shit. I don't care who you put back there. You want to let God play the number 10 position himself? Cool. God's probably got better legs right now than Leo Messi does. I bet his work rate's better, or hers. Full transparency. Last topic of the day. Nike. Or Nike. I know that I raised some eyebrows a couple of months ago when I did the bit where I was like, look, guys, it's Nike. It's always been Nike. I'm a 44-year-old boy that grew up in an era where people killed other people for their Nikes. Like the shoe wars of the 80s and the 90s, that was Nike. Air Jordan, Nike. It's an American. I've been to Nike's facilities. So, I don't know. The American in me is like, it's Nike. And then I've heard the Nike. And there's just a little piece of hearing it that, I mean, look, who the hell am I to tell someone how they should pronounce something, right? But I'll just say this. My name is Jeff with a G. And I'm probably a little sensitive to this because when I was a kid, when I was like in elementary school and substitute teachers would come in, none of them knew how to pronounce my name. G-E-O-F-F was Greg or George or anything Gregory. I got so many damn things. Nobody ever said Jeff. I think one teacher in my 12 years of adolescent schooling ever said my name correctly the first go round. So, like, getting that right, you know, has always kind of been a pet peeve. Plus, I'm a writer, so words matter. And so I've been a little bit on the, look, you got to get it right. It's Nike. If this company is going to give Liverpool, the football club, millions upon millions upon millions upon millions of dollars and be as critical of a partner as exists, we got to at least say the name, right? But no, like there's been this pushback, you know, Liverpool natives, the non-bastards, as it would be. They've been holding tightly into this Nike idea. And I don't know that I've had anybody agree with me. I feel like I am on the outside of the cool kids club when it comes to this. But here's where I'm really coming from on this, more than anything else, more than like my name and the personal nature to it all and me being a kid and just wearing Nikes for much of my life. And forget about every example I've ever given you in trying to win this debate. And just let me put it to you like this. In general, I'm a big fan of when in Rome, do as the Romans do. So, examples. When I first started following the sport and really being a fan of Liverpool, and they would play in a derby, I used to think that saying derby was very poserish. Come on. D-E-R-B-Y is derby. In America, it's derby. And, you know, us Americans can very much do the thing from Coming to America where it's like, mama call him Clay, I'ma call him Clay. But no, over time I've realized, well, yes, it would be the Kentucky Derby if it's the U.S., but in footy, in football, it's derby. And I've caught on because that's what the locals say. And if the locals are telling you that that's how it's pronounced and it's authentic to them, it's their thing, then, you know, I don't put my Americanness on it. Same thing with saying the word soccer in general. Like, that's an American word. But if I'm talking about Liverpool, it is football, isn't it? If I want to talk about the MLS, I suppose I can say soccer. It's Major League Soccer. But if I'm talking about Liverpool, it's the Liverpool Football Club. So I don't take my Americanness of soccer and I do everything I can to say football, to say footy. Why? Because authentically, it's the local thing. I would point to Nike and say, on the local level, it's important to pronounce it the way they say it. It's important to get it right the way they say it. The reason why it's important to say Nike the way, oh, I don't know, the inventor of the company said it is exactly the same reason why it's important to say Kostas Tsimikas' name correctly. So when he signed, I listened to as many Greek people as possible pronounce the name. Tsimikas seems to be the way and I can't say every Greek person because, my God, I've run so many YouTube videos and listened to podcasts, and there is no consensus. But what I do know is Tsimikas is not the way that Greeks say Tsimikas. Now, people from Liverpool have taken on to Tsimikas or Tsimikas as if it's clearly the way that his name is pronounced, but it's incorrect. So the question I have, look, I'm not going to do a bit. I'm not going to throw a fit, and, you know, performance-wise, it's going to have people think that I'm overly invested in this. Although it's like the 10th time I've talked about it in a podcast, maybe you can't stretch the way I'm invested in this at this point. Is it important to say his name correctly moving forward as a Liverpool player? If it's Tsimikas, then by God, we need to say it that way, right? But if the Greeks that I've listened to are right and it's Tsimikas, isn't it important that before he's done as a Liverpool player, that we say his fucking name right? Just once, or, you know, maybe forever. Like, wouldn't it be a good idea to figure out what he says his name is pronounced as, and then forevermore, we just say it correctly? No, I get it. Everybody's been saying Tsimikas, and at this point, to say something different would be caving in. And I do know this about people from Liverpool. Nobody caves in. By God, it's one of the things that draws me into being a Liverpool supporter as much as anything. I love the stubbornness. I love the fighting against the man. I love the rebel, if you will. It's one of the reasons why I identify with the club so much. I love what the city stands for. I love every piece of it. But mispronouncing things on purpose is not the same thing as being a hardened soul who's fighting against the man. That's not what that is. That's just being wrong and not being willing to acknowledge it. So, again, you say Darby, I say Derby, but because it matters how you say it, because it's yours, I say Darby. It's soccer in America. You say football. I've been calling another sport football my entire life. And yet when I talk about Liverpool, it is always football. Why? Because authentically, locally, organically, it is football. Nike is Nike. That's how Phil Knight, who literally invented the swoosh, that's how he pronounces it. That's how he's always pronounced it. Now, that it's been mispronounced for decades is okay. But now you guys know. Now you know. And now you're just being stubborn. And okay, okay. If that's the Liverpool way, okay. Because you guys would know better than me. But it means moving forward. If the Greeks are right, and it's not Symmachus or Symmachos, but it's Tamekus, are we going to just say his name wrong forevermore? Because we originally were saying the wrong thing so much that everybody started to say the wrong thing, and now we just say the wrong thing out of tradition? Or do we get the goddamn man's name right and just say it right forevermore? I would argue it's important to fight the man. It's important to push against the grain. It's important to be rebellious. And it's kind of important to pronounce something correctly after it's been explained to you that you've been saying it incorrectly for a long time. Just throwing that out there, not getting emotional, just a proposal of ideas that you can either toss into the trash can or think to yourself, that bastard said something smart. Doesn't happen very often. If this is it, put it in a bottle for me. I might need to drink from it a little bit later. I don't know how long I've been talking. It's been a while. Thank you for listening to this edition of The Red Bastard. I will have a follow-up edition following. What's that match? The Community The Shield. We're playing for The Shield. I will be talking post-Arsenal and Liverpool on Saturday. I know you wait with bated breath. Thank you for that whole bated breath thing for the next 48 hours. Later.